I think I would find it in my heart to forgive them for making me pay into Social Security all these years if they locked themselves out and gifted that Bitcoin to the world.
One minute we're talking about, oh, there's no gold in Fort Knox. And now, maybe we've lost the Bitcoin as well.
Never leave your funds on an exchange. Never trust a third-party custodian with your money. That is like the number one most simple golden rule. Yet everybody skips it because somehow they believe that somebody else is more capable or intelligent than they are, which is completely ludicrous.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I am joined by two of the most beautiful faces in Bitcoin, Mr. Rick Messett and Tony Yazbek. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the news. Alrighty, we've got Biden administration and U.S. Marshals cannot account for billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin, leading to speculation that it has been stolen. Now, Rick, I'm going to let you take this first. I want to make one comment here, though. Stolen, I think a lot of people assume that means like an external entity of some kind took the Bitcoin. At this point, my base case of stolen would mean an inside job and someone else transferred it to their own wallet or took the keys or and ran or whatever. But I'd be curious to hear what you think about this level of government incompetence. Oh, you're muted, Rick.
Look, I'm having technical difficulties myself, it seems, right? The funny thing about that is I was just about to say, can you imagine Joe Biden trying to use a hardware wallet, right? It'd probably be like me trying to speak on mute on a podcast, right? It's crazy. Like, the thing I can't get over at the moment is the frequency of the crazy news, right? So, like, one minute we're talking about, oh, there's no gold in Fort Knox. And now, maybe we've lost the Bitcoin as well. Maybe the interesting question here is like, you don't really lose the Bitcoin, do you? Right? Like, you can always see that it's there on the chain and identify which address it's in. So the only thing they could have potentially lost really is the private keys, right? Which, I mean, if they did do that, thank you very much, U.S. government, for the donation to everyone else on the network. Or I don't know, you know. Elon Musk and Trump are doing quite a good job of exposing a lot of corruption. So maybe the keys are lost, right? Did the U.S. government have its very own voting accession? I mean, it's who knows at this point, right? The whole thing's absolutely bonkers. I read that news article like really briefly, right? It seemed like a PR sort of puff piece from a guy who runs a company that was upset that the U.S. government didn't pay him to help him look after their Bitcoin and stuff. And in the thing that sprung out in the article was he said he's pretty confident that they might just be managing all of this stuff on an Excel spreadsheet, which is hilarious. But also when you hear it, you kind of like, man, it definitely, like, I can picture that, right? I can actually picture that. So who knows, man? I mean, who knows? Maybe Hunter Biden's got it, right? And he's on some sort of world tour now, getting up to who knows what with the U.S. strategic pile. I mean, the whole thing's funny, isn't it? It wasn't long ago we said that Trump would be putting the U.S. on a Bitcoin standard on day one of his presidency, right? Which was obviously ridiculous. And now they're not even sure where the Bitcoin is or where the keys are. Man, you couldn't write it. Sometimes I think I'm asleep. This is all just a movie, but there you have it. Yeah. Nice job, Biden.
Yeah. The strategic stockpile seems to be dwindling very quickly. Tony, what do you think?
There is no strategic reserve, man. That was just part of the marketing, the beta. Now that the product is in, it's long gone. As far as the lost Bitcoin, yeah, man, that's absolutely hilarious. Like, where did they lose it? In somebody's basement, probably. You know, if you look hard enough, you'll probably find a trail to it somewhere. But my hope is that they actually locked themselves out of these funds, because that would be absolutely hilarious. It would be like, you know, karma at its finest, a gift from the U.S. government to the world. You know, we can't access the funds anymore, but, you know, they can put whatever spin they want on it. Either way, if the money is really gone, we're gonna find out very soon that, you know, things like this, you can't hide forever. Eventually, a trail, you know, is linked or found somewhere. So time will tell.
I think I would find it in my heart to forgive them for making me pay into Social Security all these years if they locked themselves out and gifted that Bitcoin to the world. It's a good trade. All righty, some more big news we had, and this is, I did a video on this. Bybit detected unauthorized activity, blah, blah, blah. Bybit had a nearly $1.5 billion breach. They were, three of their signers were duped into what appeared to them to be a routine transaction into a warm wallet of Ethereum. And poof, went bye-bye. Looks like it went to North Korea. So to the extent that you are concerned about North Korea's nuclear program, Ethereum holders, don't worry. It's in good hands. This is just a wild story. And I think, you know, obviously I don't want this to turn into a commercial for the Bitcoin way, but like, this is the drum that we've been pounding for so long. Like, get your keys off the exchange, get your coins off of the exchange and into self-custody. We have the luxury of ignoring any sort of scams that are thrown our way, phishing emails, because my coins aren't at Coinbase. They're not on some exchange somewhere. They're certainly not at Bybit. But Tony, I'd be curious to hear your take on this as the sort of resident cybersecurity guy.
Yeah, of course, man. You can't trust any third-party custodian, be it an exchange or any other institution that is involved in, you know, the, so to speak, security and of your Bitcoin. You can't trust anybody because you have no control over how they manage whatever it is that they have of you. So if you're KYCing with institution, well, you have to trust, you know, that they don't screw up, which you cannot do. And we've seen it time and time again. A lot of them get hacked. Information gets leaked. People get targeted. People lose their funds. It's going to keep repeating itself until less people put themselves in that position. But, you know, you can't control what you can control. We teach self-custody. We teach cybersecurity. We teach proper discipline, proper skills, so that people are aware of all of these red flags. In fact, you know, we get clients that message us all the time now, you know, claiming, hey, I've received this message or that message. I didn't touch it, but just wanted to run it by you. So already people that, you know, are not coming from the tech world, they're starting to pick up on, you know, the signs, which is fantastic, because that's how you pass on the knowledge. That's how you build the instinct to not just let yourself become like a victim of these scams. Never leave your funds on an exchange. Never trust a third-party custodian with your money. That is like the number one most simple golden rule. Yet everybody skips it because somehow they believe that somebody else is more capable or intelligent than they are, which is completely ludicrous. So it's very unfortunate that this happened. I mean, the Bybit hack was definitely not the first or the last. And I'm just expecting a lot more to happen. I mean, the biggest headline I'm still waiting for is the day Coinbase gets targeted. That's going to be very, very interesting to read.
Yeah, definitely. Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, what a wild story. I mean, I'm surprised it's not picked up sort of more traction in the news, right? Because 1.46 billion makes it the biggest exchange hack in the history of Bitcoin, right? So, I mean, we're talking tremendous amounts of funds. And it was a sophisticated attack, right? So everybody's attributing it to the Lazarus Group, which is kind of like a state-funded hacking group from North Korea, right? All that ETH seems to have flowed into the hands of North Korea. God knows what their plans are for it. But the way it happens, kind of crazy, right? So I'm not going to go into too much detail, but long story short, it sounds like this wallet that was hacked was protected by, you know, multi-sig. So there's three individuals in Bybit who would each have to sign off before any funds could move, right? And this attack, you know, they socially engineered all three of these people, tricked them into signing fraudulent transactions that gave them control of the wallet, and then poof, the Ethereum's gone. I think the point that Tony makes that I think is worth drilling down on is, you know, a lot of people probably leave their funds on an exchange because they feel like the exchange is going to have, you know, more sophisticated security than them, like more knowledge, more experience. But, you know, here's the crazy thing. The final signature to you know, basically give these hackers access was blind signed on a Ledger hardware wallet. right? Like, imagine that, right? So you're sitting there thinking, okay, well, these guys are professionals, right? They're definitely going to look after my funds. And when you hear a story like this, you realize, no, what's actually happening is these are just three guys, you know, running this company. They've all bought some hardware wallets. Crazily enough, they're using Ledgers, right? I'm sure they can afford to upgrade to a better quality hardware wallet. And, you know, he's sitting in a room somewhere, he pushes the wrong button, poof, $1.4 billion gone. So I think, yeah, like Tony says, people need to realize, like, these guys aren't necessarily more astute than you, more skilled than you, and you can learn all these tools and probably do a better job than they can. And leaving your money in these giant honeypots is just crazy, right? Because, well, look, you know, the Lazarus group in North Korea are not going to go and target John Smith for his 15 grand's worth of Bitcoin that he keeps, you know, with a hardware wallet. They're going to target these big players. And like Tony says, Coinbase. So, you know, we don't want to dismiss this as like, you know, theft is wrong and all that sort of stuff. But the reason maybe we seem quite jovial about it is because, like, we've been saying this for 10 years, you know, not your keys, not your coins, right? These sayings aren't just for fun. They emerge because they reveal a truth, which is if you leave your Bitcoin in these big honeypots, you're really increasing the risk of you losing it. Taking self-custody is the safest thing that you can do. And the other thing is it's more peaceful, right? Can you imagine you had funds on Bybit and you wake up, you open up Twitter or whatever, and you see this news. All of a sudden, you're sweating bullets. You're not having a nice breakfast with your wife and she's wondering what the hell's gotten into you because you're running around thinking you've lost all your savings and all of this sort of craziness and carry on. So I just, you know, the unfortunate thing is I bet if we went and looked on chain, there are still people depositing money to that exchange, which it just blows your mind, right? So like you say, Michael, like it's not meant to be an advert, but like, I don't think it takes a genius to put the pieces together that you need to learn the skills of self-custody. And if you need help, reach out to a team that can help you.
Yeah, absolutely. One important takeaway here, though. So there was a significant technical sophistication that went into the attack. But at the end of the day, what happens in so many data breaches, these exchange hacks, is a person is the one messing up. They're the one making the final mistake that causes the problem. I think most people think that everything's like that cyber criminals are just like incredibly technically sophisticated. But we've seen like those phone calls of a guy calling. He's like, hey, your Coinbase account's at risk. And it's just like a kid who's getting someone to hand over their coins, right? Like this isn't like a genius doing it. I think Lazarus Group probably has better funding and, you know, more technical know-how. But that's why you can't trust anyone. It's not because they intended to be untrustworthy, but they proved to be such. So be careful out there, everyone. Rick, I want to share real quick. We don't need to hit on this long, but so guys, for everyone listening, Rick is the genius behind our account on X. Vitalik should roll ETH all the way back to the beginning and then not launch it at all. Worthless vaporware. Rick, why don't you give context for what you mean by the rollback? Because there's some historical context that I think would be helpful for people who maybe aren't privy to that information.
Well, yeah, I mean, first off, I love working at the Bitcoin Way, right? Because the guys give me enough room to send the occasional little spicy tweet, right? And tell a few jokes and have a bit of fun. But I feel like maybe for people who are newer to this space, right, I'm going to have to explain the joke a little bit, which is never a fun thing to do because dissecting a joke is a lot like dissecting a frog, right? It's kind of interesting, but ultimately the frog dies. So, right, we're going to kill the joke, but I'll explain it. So what I'm saying is he should roll back the ETH chain to before the Bybit hack happened, as if it had never happened before. Now, to most people who weren't around in 2016, that sounds completely insane, right? Like just reversing the blockchain so that these transactions didn't happen. But there's actually a precedence for it because back in 2016, ETH was only like a year old. They created something called the DAO, which was a decentralized autonomous organization, is what that stands for. And the idea behind it was quite simple. Everybody deposits a load of ETH and they get a load of DAO tokens back. And then this decentralized organization would then invest in things, and it would invest in things based on how people voted with their tokens. So I mean, in some ways, it's quite an interesting idea, but it's ETH, so it didn't work, right? And basically what happened is a hacker actually identified that they could siphon off all the funds, but not by hacking the contract, but by following the rules of the contract in a very specific way. Anyway, there's a whole story around that. It's really interesting. I would recommend people go and read about it. The upshot was that this was a disaster for ETH. Something like 15% of all Ethereum was wrapped up in this thing. It was only a year old. It was going to kill ETH. So Vitalik sort of proposed, well, let's do a hard fork then and roll the chain back so that those transactions never happened. And also any legitimate transactions over that period would have been rolled back as well. And that caused this, you know, as you'd expect, this big split, like total animosity. And some people run a chain now called ETH Classic, where they didn't roll back the chain, and then Ethereum carries on. The point about this joke is, right, that they rolled back that chain because of a hack. Well, Bybit just got hacked. So it's exactly the same circumstances as the DAO hack, apart from the fact that it's 10 times the size, because the DAO hack was only $150 million. This is like $1.5 billion. So people are rightly saying, well, this money's going to North Korea. Everyone's worried about terrorism and nuclear weapons and stuff. Like, why not just roll it back again? That's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but the point is, and the point that I hope people take away from it, is that ETH is not immutable in the same way that Bitcoin is. If you have these figures like Vitalik, you know, who kind of doesn't run the community, doesn't make decisions for other people, but he's kind of like a talisman and he can heavily influence the way ETH goes. It just means that, you know, you can't be sure that your transactions are final. And if that doesn't sum up why ETH is a total joke, I don't know what will.
Well said. Tony, what do you think about ETH? What do you think about, first of all, do you think there's any chance that Vitalik rolls back the chain? Like, is this potentially another thing? Like, do you think he's sitting here mulling this over?
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't he? It's technically doable, right? And he's, like Rick said, he's the talisman to this thing. So if he gets enough people on his side, you know, to rally with him, well, why wouldn't he do it? But man, it's like, we discussed this here, and this is a very deep rabbit hole, but the reality is 99% of people have no idea what's going on out there, right? Like, all of this is like so far away from their everyday lives that they, like, a lot of them just are unaware, which makes this whole thing extremely frustrating. There's no gold in Fort Knox. The U.S. government lost their Bitcoin, or they lost their keys, supposedly. You've got Bybit that was hacked. Like, everywhere you look, there's bad news that is connected to the legacy system. And they all have one point and one commonality. It's all, you know, based on that whole broken money system. Everywhere you look, there's a disaster somewhere. What's the answer? You can't fix this mess. It's beyond repair. It has gotten to a point of rot that is like, you cannot, it's finished, it's expired. So people are sort of like jumping from one to another, hoping maybe they find something that's less shitty than the other one. The solution to this is to opt out completely, a clean slate of format. You cannot fix something that's gotten this bad. This is like, you know, when you get to your famous example, Rick, on Weimar Germany, where everything is a complete farce, like extreme shit show from beginning to end. This is what we're seeing. But yet 99% of people have no idea that it's even going on, which is even more sad, because what will happen to them is that they'll just wake up one day with the end result. Poof, everything's gone. That's what's going to happen to them. Whereas people that are paying attention, the solution is crystal clear. Learn a few steps, opt out of an old broken system, adopt Bitcoin, ignore all the noise, hold it yourself, forget about the volatility, it'll pass. Sleep well at night. Done. So simple, yet seemingly so overly complicated and difficult for so many to do. Mind-boggling, really.
Yeah, I think it's really hard when you've come to that conclusion that life can be as simple as stack sats, live your life, work hard, you know, just like do the basics. It's really, really hard to wrap your head around the mentality that I need to be searching for the next thing or the right thing. It just feels so apparent. So I sympathize with people who are still earlier in their journey and figuring this out. But at some point, you've got to put these pieces together, right? Like, look at Bybit. look at, you know, like understand when you own an ETF, it's paper, it's an IOU, and it's not really even an IOU. It's an IOU for dollars. It's not an IOU for Bitcoin. Right now there's no in-kind, you can't pull Bitcoin out of your ETF. And man, it's just like every day, I feel like we have a new story like this. So I hope, hopefully these sorts of conversations help people wake up to that reality. Well, we're going to just stay on the crypto train for our last story. So crypto transfers seem to be coming restricted in Europe. And speaking of Coinbase, we've mentioned them a few times. They're blocking transfers to recipients other than yourself. And if it's a self-custodial wallet, you have to sign a message to prove your ownership. Hey, let me scroll down here. He said, when you receive funds from another exchange or wallet, you must fully identify the sender, including your passport ID, even if the sender is you. I don't know. It's hard to say if that's a Coinbase thing, if this is the European Union meddling. I mean, Coinbase has had so many issues and delays and, you know, withdrawals of funds. But at this point, I wouldn't put it past, you know, regulatory oversight that's preventing any of this. Tony, I'll throw this one back to you first. What do you think's going on, and what warning would you maybe share with listeners?
This was expected, you know, for things to get worse. I mean, this is the mafia's last attempt at somehow remaining relevant. So how else are they going to keep people from, you know, dumping that worthless euro and opting for Bitcoin or other than making their lives a living hell? The good news about this is that Coinbase isn't the only option. So when there's a will, there's a way. And when things are bad enough, people will find it. So all of these attempts are just delaying the inevitable. If somebody wants to get into Bitcoin, there's 100 ways to do it, whether it's through a regulated institution or peer-to-peer. There's a way to do it. It's just, yeah, of course, for normies that don't know any better or who are not really connected, you know, in the space, some of them might just give up because it's just too much of a headache. But, you know, at some point, even if they do give up, their lives are going to get decimated financially. And so they're going to go back to looking for a solution. So if it's not now, it's going to be down the road. But at some point, they will do it, which is why I don't think any of these, these tricks or these tightening of the noose on these exchanges is effective in any way, shape, or form. But you have to deal with these idiots. You know, they're here. You know, they're hijacking your funds, and they expect you to, you know, love them for it. So, how long that lasts, you know, depends on your tolerance for pain.
Yeah, Rick, where's your head at?
I would, I think you're probably on the money that this is the European Union sort of putting more and more onerous restrictions on crypto or Bitcoin exchanges, because you don't just see this at Coinbase. You're seeing this more and more now anywhere that you're in Europe. If you try and withdraw from an exchange, they want to know, are you sending it to yourself? Are you sending it to someone else? I mean, the funny thing about that is, like, you could send it to someone else and just tick the box that says, yeah, I'm sending it to me. They have no idea who holds the private keys to the addresses that you're telling them to send to. So it's kind of, well, like most laws they make in the EU, it's ill thought through, doesn't make a lot of sense, and shows a total lack of understanding of the technology in the first place. But them saying as well that it's like, if it's over $1,000, you're not allowed to send it to someone else. You know, that I don't know the full details, right? I'm not a lawyer, but it sounds very similar to like the travel rule, right? Like, you're not allowed to spend like over $3,000 in cash. You're not allowed to send over X amount to different people without it being like a taxable transaction, all this sort of crazy carry on. And like Tony says, it's just people desperately, more than anything, like, line it up, right? They desperately don't want you using Bitcoin as intended. They don't want you to custody your own wealth. They don't want you actually using it as money to pay people and between each other, right? They want to push this narrative that it's only for investment. They want you then to deposit your money into these centralized exchanges and buy Bitcoin, but then they never want you to take it off the exchange and do anything else with it. I mean, you know, look, I work in marketing, right? And when you look at something like that, that is intentional poor UX. It's a process of intentionally adding friction, because in that second bit, it says, oh, well, you can send it to your own wallet, but now you have to prove that it's your wallet by signing a message from your wallet. What percentage of Coinbase users do you think have any idea how to sign a message from their own wallet? It's just not going to happen. So their hope is that even if you try, you hit these roadblocks where you get stuck and you don't quite understand and you're not sure and you just go, oh, you know what, it's just easier to leave it there. Europe's going to struggle because, like Tony says, they're fighting against the inevitable. People will find ways around all of this. And, you know, in the fullness of time, all of these exchanges are going to get hacked or face a problem, and anyone stuck there is going to have a problem. So, unfortunately, more bad news for EU residents. But, like Tony says, if you're willing to put the effort in, there are other ways that you can access Bitcoin and get hold of Bitcoin. You know, if you're creative and determined enough, there's very little they can do to stop you. So yeah, like, don't, let's all move away from exchanges, go back to peer-to-peer money, right? That's the obvious solution here.
Amen. Alrighty, for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. If you have not been convinced of full self-custody by the completion of this episode, I don't know what to tell you. For those of you who have, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We would love to talk with you, walk you through how we help with proper self-custody, where you alone hold the keys to your coins, Bitcoin only, of course, no ETH. We also help with online privacy. We can help you set up a privacy phone, get your whole life secure, and we have a Plan B residency option for you as well. Would love to chat with you. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, thank you for the time. Always a blast and a pleasure getting to chat. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.